Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Star Guys, a podcast about Stargirl on the CW. I'm a Star Guy signing on for this finale episode. I'm Alex.
I am also a Star Guy, and I'm here to show how much light I have in my soul.
You're going to say your name?
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're going to be talking about the finale of season 2 of Stargirl Summer School Chapter 13. So if you haven't watched it, though you probably have by this point, but if you haven't watched it, turn away. Get out of here. We're going to spoil it. This is the big showdown with Eclipso happens here. Lots of big stuff happens as, spoiler, they beat him and turn him into some burnt toast. And then we get a good chunk of the episode is wrap up and teeing up the next season of the show, which is going to be season 3, Frenemies.
Frenemies.
And one of those frenemies is going to be none other than Mr. Bones himself.
Keith David.
Mr. Bones.
Yes. Not the character Mr. Bones. That's what we call Keith David here on the podcast, is Mr. Bones. And he always goes, no, Mr. Bones is my father. Please just call me Bones. Yeah.
Wow. Just call me Regular Bones.
Regular Bones. But yeah, what's going on. Those are the extremely broad strokes. As we suspected, Courtney found her light and fought back, but there were plenty of surprises along the way. Now, Pete, you were geeking out about this episode even before we got on. Talk about your feelings about it and the season as a whole.
Holy crap, what an episode. I mean, the kind of recap just before we kind of hit the title card for this app was so intense and so cool. It was like this, it was all worth it for this kind of moment. This whole episode was just a nonstop kind of like action. I was just really impressed with not only the pace of it, but all that happened. I was just like, wow, what an app. This is exciting. It's a great TV show, and it makes it all worth it, when you put in all this time and energy.
This guy's hype. This guy's hyped on this show right now. Pete's not just a star guy. He's a shooting star guy. And make a wish on Pete if you're listening out there, because it'll come true.
Fuck that creepy racist kid.
Wait, what?
I said, fuck that creepy racist kid. He's finally dead.
Oh my God!
Wow. Never mind about
in
what
real
I just
life.
Said. Never mind.
Yeah, Justin. What about you? What did you think about this episode and the season? Are you as high on it as Pete is?
This is a fun season. I agree. This show goes from a super dark, like everything's bad tone, to a point in the show where you can turn the villain into toast, and they're like, "That's the story." So that to me is crazy. And let me throw this out there. There's a new most interesting character on the show coming out of this season.
Ooh.
And I don't know. I'm curious who you guys think I'm talking about, if you have any guesses. And I won't keep you on the hook long, I will tell you. But if you have a guess off the dome.
Most interesting character, are you saying replacing Mikey at this point?
Yes. 100%
wow.
In line with that.
You're talking about the nurse?
The nurse. No.
Are you talking about Jakeem?
You're talking about the nurse at the end?
I am.
Keith David.
No.
Beth's parents.
Pat fighting, fighting Pat.
You've named almost every
Pat?
Character in the
Joe McHale.
Nope. It is my man, Zeke.
Wow.
The Zeke character blossomed in this finale. First off, did you know that
loves Chinese food.
His name is spelled Z-E-E-K.
That's how you spell Zeke.
That is not how you spell Zeke.
Oh, I looked at that and was like, that's how I would spell it.
Yeah, that is how a child spells Zeke, which I guess tracks with who you are. And then Zeke sees the Thunderbolt and is like giddy as a schoolboy And then he's absolutely plowing through Chinese food.
Oh, like a champion. That's how I want to eat Chinese food. I mean, oh, just everything, just a little bit of everything.
Did the Zeke is, I have a side question here. Did the magic thunderbolt, who is a genie, mind you,
walk
to China? What exactly was, what took so long for this magic genie? Well, was he just going to different shops?
He was getting a little bit of all over the place. It was I mean, that spread was, I mean, that had to take a while.
That was quite the spread. Yeah. I didn't believe that he could carry all of that in those bags, but I don't know. Who am I to say? Yeah. It looked real good. It definitely made me hungry to watch. Yeah. Hungry for more Zeke.
I mean, good. Thanks for looping it back to the real topic at hand. Honestly, Zeke dropped a lot of personality in this episode.
Yeah, he
when
did.
He saw the Thunderbolt, he was absolutely loving it.
It was, we've talked about this a lot. It was basically Pete, pretty much.
I mean, how pumped would you be if you saw genies were real and then that genie was Jim Gaffigan giving you all you could eat Chinese food? I mean, that's, you got to be excited about that.
Plus, all of his toys and contraptions he put into Stripe worked. He wished for a new part and it came. That's way
you
easier than
what?
Ordering through the catalog.
Now that you mentioned it, this is jumping off a little bit, but 100% honestly, the biggest, most audible reaction for me in the episode when I was watching it is when Stripe pulled out the chainsaw. Just that moment.
Great shot.
Great shot. Super fun.
Right at camera.
Really,
very
fun. Really just pulled off. Looping in everything that they've talked about all season long with Stripe. And as much as it was frustrating to have Stripe off the board, obviously it was building up to that moment. Obviously that's what they were working towards. And that's what my big feeling about a lot of this episode was. I think, mind you, they were pretty upfront about this, or at least Geoff Johns was upfront about this at the beginning of the season, that he was looking at this for streaming pacing. Like, he was looking at this as a bingeable show, a 13 part movie or whatever you want to call it. Like, that's how he structured it. And that's what really paid off here, is these things that they've been peppering throughout that sometimes felt like, okay, come on, let's get to the flamethrower already. We can get to the, you've mentioned it like five times. But if you're a fan watching
Smoke
it now,
them if you got them
on HBO Max, which is probably where more people are going to watch the show at this point.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. And it does provide those payoff moments in this episode.
And that's why I'm saying the Zeke arc, where he went from guy to regular guy to a guy that says, ooh, baby.
Ooh-wee. Ooh-wee, says Zeke.
Anyway.
Yes, very fun.
Wild. What a man coming into his own.
What did you think, just to jump into the meat of the episode, because most of it was a big, pretty much nonstop fight with Eclipso from the beginning to the
And
least.
Eclipso had some real moves. That one, like, kind of like knee slide, like finishing move was really badass.
I think that was a Super Mario Kart power slide he did. If I know my moves.
Yeah, that was impressive.
There were a bunch of different fight scenes, of course, with him. Some of them, frankly, I felt like were of the variety of people standing around waiting and staring at each other until they released and did one thing. But there were things like the Stripes fight scene that I thought were great. Also, the Cindy, Courtney
team
Eclipso.
Up fight. Yeah, that was awesome.
Very cool. And that reminded me really pleasantly of the spinning fight that they did in that first or second, I guess, big Shiv episode back in season one. So that was very cool as well. And just those moments throughout really powered me through the slower points of the episode, just because, again...
What slower points, dude? What are you talking about?
This there were slower
non-stop.
Points.
Stop. No way.
There were slower points. I'm sorry.
Barb woke people up, you know, and then, like, got her car keys ready to go. And
slow
then, like,
point.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know what you're talking about.
Point.
It was just, like, I was hanging on every second of that.
Great the point when Eclipso was on the car and he sees Stripe coming, and you know he sees Stripe coming, and then he's just staring. Staring and staring.
Well, because you can't believe it. It's like, wait a second. Is this a
he's puppeting a lot
car
of different
robot?
Dimensional doors.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things. And I'll tell you what, he catches that chainsaw right in the dome.
Whew.
Then he took it. Sparks fly.
Oh, man.
Another moment while I'm calling out things I like, though. I loved how they brought in Grundy here. I thought Rick,
dude,
being like,
well
my
done.
Superpower is my friend. Grundy coming in, kicking the crap out of Eclipso. Very good. Really nice payoff of that as well.
That was so huge because, like, even Eclipso was like, what are you doing here, guy? You don't have your powers. And then it was like, I don't need powers when I got Grundy.
My power is friends.
Yeah.
My powers are feeding the swamp for a whole season.
For that payoff. But, man, when Grundy got a big hole in him, I was very, very sad.
He gets wrecked pretty quickly. Now, at the end of the episode, we get Shade hanging out with Rick at the Grundy grave.
Very large grave.
Shade. Also, by the way, I have no questions about how Rick got Grundy into that grave all by himself or buried him or that dirt or anything like that.
Well, I think he just stepped into the hole in his chest and picked it up like a barrel. Picked up the corpse like a barrel and walked it over. That's how I would do it.
Two suspenders.
The old barrel move. Yeah, sure.
Yes, absolutely. What were you going to ask, though, about Grundy coming back?
I feel like maybe, for those of you that don't know, the character of Solomon Grundy in the comic books, his whole thing is being resurrected. And in the Starman comic book, famously, when he did come back, he had a different personality, a much more gentle personality, which allowed him to become a hero and be part of sort of the Starman family.
And, oh my God, I'm blanking on the, what was it? The Gotham show where Grundy was like also died, but then came back different and was like, you know, not a better version, like a worse version of himself. So it'll be interesting when he comes back next season, what kind of Grundy we're going to get. But also you want to talk about people who were hype. Like as soon as we saw Shade, he is in such a better, he's just all having fun. Just like, oh yeah, there's a big battle going on, but man, I'm going to get some zingers in.
That was another one of those moments that definitely wasn't padded out when Dr. Manetta's like, wait, how did you come back? And Shade is like rattling through maybe 50 different explanations. He's like, I guess we'll have a no. Poop-a-doop-a-doop.
Yeah.
Just bounces out of there. And it's fine. I don't need to know or anything like that. But I don't know.
Well, and as we're discussing all this, I feel like maybe the overall note I have is this felt very comic booky in a great way. Like that scene you're just describing, Alex, yeah, a TV show, a more TV show would sort of have an explanation and really walk us through.
Well, he did say he was keeping the parents alive.
Yeah, and like that's good because it established that he is good as well as mischievous and bad and all of that. But I think that scene felt very comic booky where it's like, I'm back, gotta go do this next thing in a second in two panels or whatever. So like... And a great moment when Eclipso's climbing up and jumping roof to roof. I was like, this is straight out of like a Batman comic. Like, there was a lot of great visual.
It's my time
story
now.
Structure. Yeah. And story structure that really felt comic booky in an excellent way. It felt like Geoff Johns really bringing that energy purposefully to this.
Well, I think the most Geoff Johns-y thing to me in a very positive way. Oh, what are you going to
say? I know what you're going to say, I think, and I'm curious.
Oh, I was going to say when Courtney finally breaks out through the power of love and family and everybody being around, that to me was the thing that was the most, like, just driving back to what the character is and what the character's about, that Eclipso, ultimately, the way that he messes up is by being like, nobody loves you. And she's like, what? No, I have lots
everybody
of people.
Everybody loves me.
Everybody
loves me. I'm
the
star of this show.
Yeah, exactly. My name's on the title. We bring it up at the beginning. This time, it was a different color. It was purple and...
Justin, what did you think he was going to say for the Geoff Johns scene?
I'll tell you in 1 second. Well, I see it. In that moment,
wow,
I thought...
Wow, really
she was,
teasing stuff.
Yeah,
really teasing it. Well, I just wanted to respond one more time. But like, in the moment, I thought when she was like, no one loves you, she's going to be like, but I'm in summer school. Because this is summer school. But no, the moment you're going to say that felt the most comic booky to me was when they have Eclipso on the ropes and they are all blasting him with their different colored light powers. I was like, this is straight out of a comic book. I loved it. The light wielders blasting him felt like very green, Geoff Johns' Green Lantern comic book. Mm-hmm. That was very cool. And sort of, besides being a comic book fan and loving seeing it, symbolized like that people from all variety, good, bad, or the Thunderbolt being like sort of indifferent, coming together to beat Eclipso was very cool.
What did you think about them doing pretty much straight up the Loki facing down the Avengers or Avengers facing down Loki thing from the first Avengers movie right before that. Like when Eclipso's on the steps and they're all gathered, same shots, like same exact shots, which I think is fine. You could do a homage.
Well,
I don't mind it. I don't mind it, especially because we never got that in the Justice League movie. We haven't gotten it with our DC characters, and this felt like a great execution of that, even though it was a little bit.
Yeah, it felt epic, and it was like nice to see everybody come together in it, you know.
Yeah, great. And I agree with you on the light moment as well. That was very fun, very comic booky. Really enjoyed that. And as soon as Jakeem said, "You're toast," or whatever the line was, I was like, he's definitely going to change
it. Turn it to toast, right? Powdered toast, man. I mean, come on.
Good punch.
And the toast had Eclipso and burn marks.
Yeah, like almost full. Yeah, that was.
I was like, that's goofy. That's goofy in a way that a show that just had the different heroes face down absolute darkness, dealing with the fact that they've killed, being unloved or underloved by your parents, like all this crazy. And there's like, and the bad guy's toast. It's like a pun.
It's great. Yeah. It's good. I honestly would have wanted more of that from this season. At the end, when they're all sitting on the steps and they're like, well, this is finally feeling like summer. I was like, the last episode, go back in time.
Yeah, but it's also like the weather-wise was all over the place, and they finally got like a day that felt like summer, you know?
There's definitely a weather comment.
The other moment that I'll throw out there that I thought was great, even though you know it's coming as soon as Barb looks out the door and says, whoa, it's you, Starman showing up, and the way that he helped Courtney was perfect.
Yeah, the maybe too. I was like, Joel McHale, you snarky son of a gun. Whoa, man. I didn't know who was at the door, but I thought that was such a great entrance and such a fantastic use of Joel McHale.
Well, I also like the fact, and I'm sure they're going to play with this a lot next season now that we know he's moving in with Whitmore Dugans, but the fact that like he was good and he was helpful, because there's been all these questions about what is he doing? Why is he looking for Pat? How is he back alive? That certainly makes you very suspicious of him. And there's still plenty of time to dig into that. But the fact that in this final fight here, he was straight up helping Courtney, saying, no, I'm not taking the staff away from you. I'm helping you fight through this and coaching you through this, I thought was awesome. I loved how that executed.
Yeah, I mean, the way he was creepily listening in the basement and then came back in and was like, hey, listen, I'm not trying to do all these things you said, maybe under your breath or away from my ears. I'm here to help was really nice, because that's what you want. You don't want Joel McHale to come back and be like, all right, this is my show now. Thanks, everybody. You want him to train Courtney to use it right and to kind of really, you know, because the staff is its own kind of character a little bit, and there's a lot to do there. So it was nice to kind of get that attention.
Do we think that he's good? He's smarmy, and he's a little
weird. Joel McHale. That's going to be a little bit on there, but no, I do think he's good.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a long play, but the fact that he hasn't said how he came back or anything like that, at the very least, and this is not necessarily evil, but at the very least, that moment where he says superheroes don't need school sets him up in direct conflict with Pat next season, which I think is great. To have Pat.
I mean, do you guys, as parents, you guys agree with that? That like, if you're a superhero, you don't need... Really? Oh, wow.
I just gave my kids grappling hooks and...
You're a good...
Send them out on the roof. See what happens.
Good luck. Stop one crime tonight or no candy.
Dinner is candy at your house, right?
Yeah. Candy crime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I think there's something going on with him, and I do like Pat's arc here. Seeing Luke Wilson fight Luke Wilson.
The versus fights were fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the one was a little too close to kind of Wolverine, but whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it was still very
little Shiv.
Yeah, little Shiv versus big Shiv. I just thought the versus moments were cool, and it was hysterical to see Pat Dugan a headlock and
it was crazy. It's like seeing vanilla fight a slightly spicier vanilla.
Come on, dude. Don't say that. The Dukes, like, is phenomenal.
It's like pouring together whole milk and 2% milk in a glass and watching them fight.
No, come on. The part was like, that's not all Dad used to say. And then he finished the sentence as he hit him in the face with a keyboard. That's hysterical.
Even evil Pat wasn't that evil. He just like was a little bit.
Because it's still Pat.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
He was just actually having fun was the difference.
Yeah.
He was just Pat who had a good night's sleep. Also, just the way Pat's used in this show is really interesting. He is like Courtney's sort of hook and moral center, and like it keeps her going. But in any action sequence, they're like, Pat, you go. You're the least equipped for this. Go into danger. I'm like, don't say
that. Well, the way he ran by Eclipso early on, he was like, you go help best parents. He's like, you know? Yeah. You cool with this Eclipso? I'm just going to run by.
Okay. I'm not going to do anything. Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, my God.
I feel like we're also setting Pat up to be, next season, to be this sort of traffic cop dealing with all these different enemies and friends trying to, like, exist in the same town.
Although, like, the fact that he risked himself to go help Mikey in the robot and then was kind of flailing around by his arm there was powerful and very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible to see him save his son from an exploding robot. Real good parenting there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wouldn't.
Yeah. Not me. That's true. I wouldn't.
I'd save the robot.
I'd save myself. I could make more kids.
Oh.
Ooh, nice. Wow. But you can't make another robot.
I really hope your kids never listen to any of these because they definitely won't.
There's 0% chance of that.
Our descendants will pass down these podcasts like like precious family.
How did you feel, Justin? Because you correctly predicted that Mikey would ride in the stripe soup this episode, and he did.
He certainly enjoyed it. He did the butt waggle. He's Come very on. Adept.
Smoke him if stuff. You got him. The chainsaw moment was great. It was nice to see Mikey participating in a way that was, you know, appropriate.
And it does make a little more sense to have Mikey in the striped suit than Pat, right?
Yeah. Well, especially if Pat's just going to be like boots on the ground, running around, talking to everybody, sort of the communicator.
Giving them pep talks as they go down, yeah.
Yeah, then, yeah, put Mikey in that suit, let him pull on all those levers and whatever. It's fun.
I like that. I also, if we want to jump in and start talking about the end of the episode, just because there's so many things that are laid out there, I do love having Sportsmaster Tigress and Artemis all move in next door.
Man.
That's great. Very fun. Really showing some character progression by bringing muffins that aren't like gluten-free muffins, you know, like they learn the power of sugar. I think.
I mean, the fact that like we kind of have everybody come together and fight Eclipso was really awesome. And you guys talked about it. But when you saw the two arrows go into Eclipso's chest, I was like, no way. And that was like, that was really cool.
I mean, it was fun that they showed up, threw a couple of darts into the Eclipso, beat him, and then afterwards they're like high-fiving along with everybody else. I was like, you guys didn't do shit. Get out of here.
Sometimes you just gotta show up at the end, throw a couple darts, you know?
They literally are they're like banging their bats together.
I go bar to bar with my own darts, and I just wait until somebody's about to finish a darts game, and I just throw it right into the bullseye, and I'm like, later.
Oh, you throw it right into the bullseye?
Well, I walk over and I place it in the bowl.
There we go.
Take a sip of the beer, really, to like drive it home.
Wow, what an alpha!
You must go and make so many friends at these bars you go to.
Absolutely, I don't stick around to find out necessarily. I'm usually running out the door after this ritual, but it is what it is. But that's going to be a fun tease. We talked about the shade a little bit. I also loved the scene with Cindy and Yolanda at the end. Cindy, always great, but the idea of her saying, come on, you got a pass, I should get a pass, the way she delivers that line was so good, and it's going to be really interesting to see her.
That's going to be a tough conversation.
That's
going to be tough, because it's like, Cindy, I mean, technically you're right, but I don't know if you really want to be good.
Well, probably not. it's going to be a hard road, but I do like her looking at Yolanda as sort of this forced sponsor for her on this journey. Yeah. I think that's a really good pair up, particularly because Yolanda has been so purposefully sidetracked this season, whether through grief or anguish or just literally being off screen. I think pairing the two of them together, it changes up the Cindy-Courtney dynamic, but it also makes the Cindy-Yolanda dynamic very interesting going forward.
Yeah, because I think it's they're occupying a little bit of the same spot in the JSA, if assuming Shiv joins. But they are really two sides of the same coin. Like, Yolanda has done something bad but wants to be good, and Cindy's done something good but sort of wants to be bad. Her instincts are to be bad. So that's a fun way that they can, like, mess with each other going forward.
And also, it was, you know, if Cindy is really growing, I mean, it was pretty cool for her to be like, yeah, okay, I was wrong. Yeah, yeah, I guess she needs to get darker. Yeah, she needs to, you know, so that was interesting. I do really think that Cindy and Yolanda together are great on screen, and I like their back and forth for sure. So I definitely hope that continues. There was one thing that, I want to talk about the Beth stuff, some real emotional, like, you know, it was a little crazy how quick their parents' marriage was back on, but I do really liked the, you know, once, like, kind of Eclipso's power was gone and we got to see the two Midnighters dressed alike, and like the part where he was like, you should be very proud, like, to the parents was really emotional, and then like to see Beth like happy was great. That was some good stuff.
But now her parents are too involved in her life.
Too
high. They care too much.
Yeah, they're.
And we're going to see probably a new costume for her, which is something that her character does get in the comics as well, is this nanofiber or nanotech black and yellow costume. So that should be interesting if we see that going forward.
But the fact that, like, because this whole thing with Joel McHale as well, like, who's going to be what? And then, you know, that whole Beth thing, Midnighter, when she found out, you know, where his wife was, and, that, you know, like, hey, you have a son. And this whole thing of, like, you know, but what if the world needs a Dr. Midnighter? And he was like, it already has one. Just powerful. Yeah. Just great.
And I loved how I followed that up with, it's me, just to be clear. Yeah. Not you.
He's out.
No, get out of here.
No, it was, don't ruin what?
Now, how did you feel, Pete, about the fact that you, not only did we not see two owls, we did not see one owl. The owl continues to stand alone.
That's heartbreaking. I mean, that's somebody in the writer's room not paying attention. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you set this up, you set up the sad owl all by itself, and then you left it there. You know, I don't know what it's called, where it's the, you know, the gun that you kind of talk about
Chekhov's owl.
Chekhov's owl. Yeah, you really drop the owl on that one.
An AK-47. I think that's what you're thinking of. The gun you talk about. Less disappointing to not see the owl. He ran off after his son, who he's never met, instead of the owl that he knows very well, who is dying at the JSA
slowly dying.
Very Maybe sad. Next season is the all owl season that we
owl and the Mies.
Owls.
Court of owls. Sure. Dr. Igniter is gone. Beth is dealing with her parents. Yolanda is dealing with Cindy. Courtney is definitely going to be stuck between Pat and Starman at this point. We also got Jakeem and Mikey forming their own JSA, something like that.
The Triple J.
We'll see what happens. That feels like that's going to be a hilarious comedy of errors. We also, he didn't show up very much this season, but we also got to see Cameron is finally finding out about his ice powers.
Old ass racist people. Fuck that.
Those old maniacs. Shoot ice.
What would you do if your grandparents came up to you and said, it's time to tell you the truth about ourselves, and started breathing ice and then their eyes turned blue?
I'd be like, well, you guys are dying. Both of you are very
I'd probably run for my life.
To the hospital.
Interesting. He's the only character set up as an enemy and not a frenemy.
He still likes Courtney, so he doesn't have a very good reason, I guess, until he finds out that Mikey was responsible for his dad's death, but until then, he doesn't really have a reason to be their enemy. So, I don't know.
We'll Except see. For Ice Grandpa and Grandma.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Maybe they got raisins.
Yeah. I thought for a second you said they have raisins, which is also probably true.
Let's be honest. They have raisins.
Yeah.
They have Werther's Originals. They got raisins. You know, whatever you want.
Literally whatever you want.
Whatever old stuff they want. What are their raisins? What are their raisins for acting that way?
Well, California raisins is one.
Let's stop.
They heard
this.
It through the grapevine.
Let's talk about the post-credits tag, because we go over to the Helix Institute. We get to see that creepy nurse and the reveal of, as we mentioned, Keith David as Mr. Bones from the comic books. For those who don't know about Mr. Bones, that we have talked about him on the podcast before, he's got transparent skin, muscle, and organs. His skin is poison, so you can't touch him. And he also has super strength. And in the comics, he's originally a villain. He actually tangles with Yolanda and Beth.
He also hates it if you mess with his fries. You never mess with another man's fries.
Absolutely. Well, but that's like everybody. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's all the characters.
Yeah. Or Bagglers. You can have his Bagglers, though. That's fine. That's not a big deal. Right, what? Pete?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Bagglers? The fries left at the bottom of the bag? You don't call them Bagglers?
No, I've never heard that. That's weird.
Oh, that's like stragglers?
Yeah, but like Bagglers.
Bagglers, huh?
Why would you think Pete would know that?
It seems straight over the plate.
It's a food thing. It's a food thing.
It's a food.
We're talking about
the
fries.
The loose food thing.
Yeah. So he seems a little different here. He eventually, in the comic books, became the head of the DEO, the Department of Extranormal Operations, I believe, which is over in Supergirl, and they're running a different version of it there.
Oh, yeah, they are.
This definitely seems like the more villainous version. He seems like the big bad for season 3. But what do you think he wants at this point with Blue Valley and with everything that's going on here? What makes him a villain?
Well, I'm curious. He probably, if I had to guess, he wants to control some of these superhumans so that he can use them to do missions and whatnot. It feels like that's what they were trying to control Jade's brother, Todd, who we don't actually get to see as I had predicted. I thought we would see him. So it seems like they're just tracking. Maybe it's not working out with Todd, or Todd is somehow missing. And so they're going to be like, well, let's go track down these other superheroes who are pretty powerful. Jade, despite the fact that she's like, should I go fight Eclipso? And Barbara's like, yes, go. You are very powerful. I think he's going to be tracking down them.
Yeah. Pete, any predictions for season 3 as we're moving into that here?
Man, I don't know. I'm very excited. It seems like, we got a new bad, which is great. Keith David, I mean, his voice is creepy in all the right ways. So just like hearing that, voice is just so powerful. So I'm very excited to see how they're going to use him, but I'm also just glad that we're going to spend some time training Courtney and getting her kind of really superheroed up here. So it should be cool. I think it's going to be very interesting.
I'm excited about that, too. Just the tease here that we're going to find out a lot more about the Cosmic Staff and the origins there in season 3. Very interested to find out what's going on with Starman and whether that is, in fact, Starman at all or somebody else. You know, maybe we'll find out that Bones is not the real villain of the season. Maybe he's somebody who's interested in the town, and ultimately it is Joel McHale's character, whoever that is, who is going to turn out to be the big bad. Just a theory.
That's what I think. I think Bones is going to end up being sort of a gruff force that will eventually be for good, while Starman is very suspicious. And as we know, this next season is going to move into regular school.
Yeah, not summer school anymore.
Much less fun. And this already was kind of a bummer, as we've talked about. Not the season. We enjoyed the season, I think. But
yes.
We're talking about summer school.
What happened?
Summer school.
Yeah, summer school, just as a concept. Before we wrap up here, though, was there something else you wanted to call out, Justin? Looked like
huge gap in. I didn't hear a lot of radio updates in this.
Oh, yeah, we didn't
get very little DJ involvement. which is always a shame. Okay. Easy to slide it in, like, whoa, we got a big fight downtown, downtown, everybody, head downtown or don't go downtown if you don't want to fight.
What was his name, DJ Freaky Z or something like that?
No, that's your DJ name, that's Freaky Zalbin, right?
Yeah.
Hey, it's me, DJ Freaky Z, and once again, we're playing the Monster Mash, the only song we have the rights to. Here we go.
It's almost Halloween, the only time this station makes any sense.
They did the mash. Before we wrap up here, though, okay, yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, there was one part that I wanted to talk about, like,
this is like the baglers of opinions of the podcast book.
Exactly, sure. Yeah. Hey,
what a shorthand wrong. We have.
Hey, we might be fries at the bottom of the bag, but we still count as fries.
They're the most delicious fries.
I believe Oscar Wilde said that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're all at the bottom of the bag, but some of us are looking up at the fryer or whatever.
I believe they're called Chekhov's fries.
Oh, boy. Anyways, I wanted to kind of talk about Shade being a dick to Rick. The fact
Rick
that,
dick.
Yeah, the real Rick Dick, where he was just kind of like, ironic, the fact that your parents were killed by this beast, yet you're mourning him. I liked where it got eventually, but that's a real dick thing to say to somebody right off the bat. Like, hey, remember when your parents died? It was by Grundy's hands. So,
also, I'm not 100% sure that's irony, but I'll just throw that out there.
Well, you know, if you want to go back to the song, I mean, there was a lot of things that were just kind of,
I think Alanis says, after 10,000 spoons, I think she mentions Grundy and our relationship.
She does give a lot.
It's like, Barry and Grundy,
after they kill your parents. Yeah. So
it's just a weird song. It was a weird time.
It was a weird time for sure. But I just thought that, like, Shay continues to be this will he, won't he character. And I was hoping to get that a little bit more cleaned up. Like, Shade's a good guy. He is, helpful. But it still was kind of like, you know, Shade being...
Well, you mean, when you say will he, won't he, you mean he and Barb?
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Because like, you're a berade shipper.
I'm a Barb Pat guy, okay?
I do actually want to ask you about this, Pete. And I know you're going to say no. I feel like there's some sparks between Barb and Starman.
Nope.
Don't you think?
Nope.
I don't know. She seemed pretty surprised and interested to see him at the door.
Well, it's a surprise for sure.
What do you think about Barb and Evil Pat? That guy's a little more.
Maybe they play that to spice it up a little bit. She's like, be Evil Pat tonight. All right, I'm going to make pancakes with M&Ms. Wow.
Stop. I don't know what impression you're doing there, but stop it.
All right, Pat, now you kiss Evil Pat.
All right. Classic Luke Wilson. Before we wrap up here, who was the star of the episode? Pete?
It's really hard to pick. I mean, you know, Pat said it was Courtney, you know, but I agree with Courtney. It took everybody for it to happen. I don't know. I really think Cindy was the star. The way Cindy got not only people to drop their shit and join the fight, but the way that Cindy made some phone calls, brought in some extra. I think Cindy might deserve a shot. To get on the team, and she really brought it. And I thought there would be this thing where Cindy is like, I'll help, but then I'm going to fuck shit up. I was impressed. So I'm saying Cindy.
I hate to say the same character that I've used a lot, but I think the star was clearly Zeke of this episode.
Yeah.
Zeke really emerged as the full flower of his possible character.
Eating goals, for sure. I mean, the way I want to one day be able to eat like Zeke.
I like to eat like Zeke. I think that Zeke will be revealed later as a future version of Mikey sent back in time to eat Chinese food with his friends. And I'll tell you what, that might happen.
That's a great life.
This is a very easy one, but I'm just going to give it up to Courtney in this episode.
Okay.
So easy.
It was very easy.
What a bandwagoner.
But It was a good episode for Courtney. We've talked a lot about how she has been on the side for most of this season while we've been focusing on everybody else. But seeing her step up, refocusing on the core values of the show, which are all about her light and her bringing these people together, which is exactly what she did here, I thought was great to see. And it was very pleasing right at the end.
Pleasing. I was pleased.
I thought this was a very pleasing episode. I mean, so much fun. So much happened.
Totally agree. If you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Stargirl. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at StarGuysPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until season 3, Star Guys out.
See you next season, gang. Zeke!